What is up, everybody? Adrian M. Gibson here. What you're about to hear is the audio version of a live author panel recorded during TBRCon 2024, the latest edition of FanFiatic's all-virtual annual science fiction, fantasy, and horror convention, which streamed live between January 21st and January 28th, 2024. FanFiatic and TBRCon had the pleasure of hosting 25 amazing author panels, and we're so happy to be able to provide the audio for you for free here on the podcast feed. So, sit back, relax, and enjoy this fantastic TBRCon 2024 author panel.
Thanks for joining us, everybody. So if you're watching us live, I don't know who we have watching us live. I'm trying to find the section here. But this is the S. Oh, my goodness. I cannot do the acronym. The Self-Published Science Fiction Contest Year 2, which is SPSFC2. So goodness gracious. I don't know why. It's something about that long acronym. I can't get it. I'm so excited to have y'all here. And then we also have Dito over there who won the prize for the best cover. And of course we have our number one winner with the trophy down there over there in the back. So yes, what'd you say?
Mirrors, how do they work?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, thank you all for joining us. Why don't we go ahead and just kind of walk through, say hello, introduce yourself, tell a little bit about yourself, where you're from, anything like that. Why don't we start with, I don't know if y'all see it the same as me, but Scott's right here to my right. So why don't we just work our way this way, then down, then over and down. So.
Yeah, that works. Yeah, hi, everybody. I'm Scott. You may have seen me if you've entered the competition. I've kind of inherited the admin duties, moderator duties for the Discord channel, trying to work on the website as much as I can, but it's a haul. So year two was where we've kind of revamped a little bit of the process. We're still working on the rules and things like that. But if you've entered, I've probably seen your name, your books and the files and spreadsheets are all flying all over the place. But yeah, I've been in it for 2 years now. I plan on continuing. As a judge, at least, maybe not as much as a moderator as life happens, but yeah, it's exciting to see all your faces. Hi, everybody. I'm a real person, a real human, instead of just a name behind a Discord channel. So yeah, good to meet all you.
Awesome. Thanks, Scott. How about you, Cameron? Share a little bit about yourself.
I came fourth in year number two with Hammer and Crucible. I've actually I write under two other pen names as well. I write fantasy and I write romance, but Cameron is for science fiction, usually space opera. And I've written, I think about 210 books now. I write time and have 100% indie. And I live in Canada, Alberta, right next to the mountains, which is very nice.
I think you blew every single one of our minds when you said the number of books you've written.
Like, need a pause? Do we need a moment?
Yeah. I've written a few, yes.
Wow. That's amazing. That's... How many? So you write under pen names. How many pen names do you have?
I have three. And actually, up until a few days ago, I was keeping them under wraps. But I've got to the point now because I'm not worrying about pleasing the Amazon algorithms anymore. I've sort of come out. So I write science fiction as Cameron Cooper.
You don't have to share the rest if you don't want to.
I'm fine with that.
You share the rest?
Yeah. I do fantasy as Talon Carver.
Okay.
And I do romance and all sorts of things as Tracy Cooper Posey. So
there we go. And then, of course, those are just pen names. So then you have a secret name that you don't tell any of us. So I'm just kidding. No, you don't.
My real identity, yes.
All right. It's really a combination of all those names. You all need to play some mystery game to figure it out. But anyway, all right. So Dito, why don't you share a little about yourself?
I was really hoping I wouldn't have to go next.
I'm following the
train. How many books have you written, Dito?
So, I've read 210 books, and I've written one book, Debunked, and it was a semi-finalist in this year's SPSFC, and then it also won the cover competition, which was super awesome. And I did the illustrations, but I also worked with a professional cover designer who took those and elevated it to a marketable concept that I never would have come up with in 100 years.
That's amazing. How, like, what was you, like, the artist's name? Do you?
Oh, Kirk DuPont. He's a great cover guy. He's done hundreds of them. He does a lot with Scholastic. I write in YA fantasy, YA sci-fi. And so we were right up each other's alley. As far as I tried working with other designers, and he and I just connected. And when he asked if he could read the manuscript before he came up with a design, he won my heart forever.
That's awesome. Love that. Well, your cover was gorgeous.
Thanks.
Definitely think that was it. It was 100% deserving of that award. So sweet. Well, Drew, why don't you go next?
Sure. I have written two books, but one of them is mostly pictures, so it probably doesn't count. I live in the Philadelphia area. I have no pen names. When I was younger, I was going to be A.T. Melbourne because that sounded more science fictiony. But then one time somebody called me A.T. and I said, that cannot ever happen again because that sounds terrible.
That's amazing. Love it. All right, Nick.
Yeah, so hi, everyone. I'm Nick. I is N.C. Scrimger. And I'm a self-published sci-fi and fantasy author based in Scotland. My book, Those Left Behind, came runner-up in this year's competition. And I've since sort of, that was the book one in a trilogy, which I've sort of since completed. So I have 5 books out just now. I've got the Way Stations trilogy. I've got a prequel to that. And my kind of newest projects sort of move into towards fantasy. So that's my newest one.
I didn't know you had a prequel to the Waymaker trilogy.
Right? Way Stations.
Waystations. Waymaker, Waystations. But I didn't know you had a prequel to that.
I kind of call it a prequel. I did write it first, but it was never kind of, I suppose, intended to be part of the trilogy. It was almost my kind of, I'm going to try and write it and I'll make my mistakes with this book and then I'll get on to the proper kind of trilogy that I really want to write. So
nice. That's a really smart method. I'm not a writer, but that sounds like, you know, write a prequel book to help get your story ready and then you forget about it and move on to the room. Anyway, but all right, Rory, why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So I'm Rory August. I was lucky enough to, by just a hair, pull out the win for last year's SPSFC, which I'm still really astonished and grateful for. It's still just one of the highlights of my life for sure in career. I'm not super interesting. It's the one book that I've written and published. I'm working on another one, fighting tooth and nail to overcome that sort of sophomore book syndrome where the first book does decently well and gets recognition. And now I'm like, is this what people expect from me? Because this was a mistake. That's currently the battle that I'm waging with myself right now. But yeah. Hello, it's nice to be here and see all of you.
Love it. Well, great. Well, thank you all for introducing yourselves. And I'm excited to kind of talk a little bit about all of your experience being a part of the SPSFC2 contest. And so why don't we talk a little bit about, does anybody particularly have any like story on what made them like decide to like jump on to the contest? Like, did someone like push you to do it, or is there any like wild story out there? I just don't know y'all stories about what made you decide to enter. So
Well, I'll jump in if no one else does, which is so I originally submitted my book to be part of the first SPSFC, so the SPSFC 1. I'm going to try and say that as quick as possible, because it was what the cool kids were doing. So I had a bunch of friends and acquaintances in, you know, across social media in the indie author scene. So my book made it to the quarterfinals. The lead of the group who was judging was Scott. It's possible that the folks in Scott's group did not take to my book in the first year. It's possible that Scott wrote like a Twitter capsule review that was something to the effect of, wow, that's a lot. I might be paraphrasing. it really speaks to the fact that, on any given day with any group of people, you have a particular book that's going to appeal or not to them. And then somebody else is going to be like, this is the greatest thing ever. One of the great things that happened was when folks were opening things up for the SPSFC2, they said, hey, some of the people who just made it into the slush pile or into the quarterfinals could reapply, which I was like, sure, why not? I already filled out this form once. I was super lucky, I guess, to you connect with the right people made it to the finals, which is really great. If at first you don't succeed, just do the same thing again.
That's good.
I went in the first one because everyone was talking about this really hot new contest that all the science fiction writers should go in. I didn't even make it into the slush pile. I just got immediately chopped. And then I got an email the next year for number two that said, we've sort of changed the rules and the filters a bit. Please try again. So I went in it and honestly didn't expect anything to happen with it because I thought last year was, okay, that's not the sort of thing they're interested in, and made it into the finals. So, yeah, it's just different years, different judges. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Similar for me as well. I'd obviously heard of the first one when I'd finished the sort of prequel and was still writing the Waystations trilogy. So I entered that in the first one. And again, it, I think, got cut in the sort of first round and stuff, which was fine. I didn't really kind of have any expectations. And then obviously when year two came around, I was like, right, I think I've got a better book in my hands here. I'm going to sort of try again. And it was just great. So I'm glad that I decided to kind of go for it with a different book for year two, but to go in for it again.
That's awesome. I published Last Gifts in April of 2022, and that was kind of around the time that the first competition was starting to wrap up. And I was just getting started with the indie community, 2 months prior, I had zero followers. I just decided to create a Twitter account out of nowhere and started talking with people. And really, the indie community is so good about supporting each other and shouting out about contests. There's no withholding the information so that you have a better chance of success. This community is just so good about involving each other. And so I found out about it pretty quickly and thought, why not? And it was just kind of took a chance. Glad I did.
Can you believe you published and then a year later you've won a contest with that?
Yeah, it's surreal. And I've written for a long time and failed at many things. This wasn't my first book. This was just the first one I decided to publish. I'm not some hot shot new kid on the block, just picked up a pen 2 years ago. I've been writing and sucking at it for well over a decade, and I look forward to continuing to suck at it moving forward.
Oh.
I'm good to, we all have to suck at least one draft, right? At least one.
You don't if you don't ever write one. So, like me.
Yeah.
But I'm just kidding.
I think my origin story as a judge or from conception, like I don't I don't really recall where it stemmed from. Like Duncan and I were talking on Twitter or something. And then I got on the Discord and it was a lull in my work. So I was like on there all the time. Had like website experience. And so I was like, hey, I can help build a WordPress site. And then from there, just kind of kept growing. But then seeing all the, as a judge for the past 2 years, yeah, seeing all the conversations between the teams and seeing all the books that come through your slush pile. And there were good ones. I think we all have our gems. Like there's plenty of ones that I liked that didn't make it through. It's such a hard, you know, filter to get from out of 200, like this year we had 270 or some, and the first year was over 300, to get from that first point all through the barriers and the opinions and the points of view and the life, you know, life experiences that people have to get a book from start to finish is very difficult to do. Cause there's some people are more sensitive on others on graphic things, violence, you know, there's just those little things that people have the particulars about that's just going to knock the score down. And there's not a mandatory way as judges or as when we started the judging to really kind of curb that. You know, we put out rubrics and says, okay, you know, objectively on an objective level, what are these, do these hit these plots and does it, you know, but you can't get through people's own, you know, viewpoints. And so we try our best to put averages together and balance them all out. But we're still like this year, we made like a Senlin net for, you know, third place options, because if we didn't feel like it's a whole mechanics of this thing, and it keeps growing and being more complicated as the years go on. So we've had plenty of backlash and controversy so far on SPSF 63, which, and I think the later we go down in the years, just like the SPFBO, it's going to get, you know, we're going to get louder voices and people that are going to get angrier. And it's hard to update and communicate effectively. Like last year, I tried to put all the review links on the websites, and that took so much time. This year, I haven't been able to. So authors are, you know, they don't get communication from us as judges as often as they want. And so we try to put it on Twitter and everywhere else. So we need, I think, after these 2 years, the third year, we're going to try to put a more centralized, crowdsourced place to put all that stuff. Because this year we found a way I can embed a Google Sheet onto the website. It's like, all right, well, why don't we just give all the judges access to the Google Sheet? We have a tab for reviews, and people just line up their reviews and dump them on there. Something that's simpler than making a WordPress post for every single thing, and then WordPress breaks, and I can't do it anymore.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's, I think it's my villain origin story.
Yeah. What'd you say, Nick?
I was just going to say, I think the thing that's great is, like, obviously all the judges and the people involved, like, all just volunteers, you know, doing it to out of, like, love for the genre and supporting the indie community. And I think that's the kind of thing to think of like, the big picture, is just everyone kind of involved in this competition is not kind of getting paid or anything. It's just, like, kind of pure sort of love and support for the genre and the indie community. So I think that's something that's really special about it.
Yes, it's after last year, my husband stepped up as a volunteer this year. He's one of the judges. So,
oh, nice. That's right. He joined in. You should have thrown a mic on him, got him in here.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I was from, so that was my, I'm still only a couple years into the indie review world. I'm reading mostly, almost like exclusively, you know, traditionally published books. And so when I started reviewing a couple years ago, I heard about the, you know, of course I heard about the first contest, and then I also was hearing about, you know, the one that Mark Lawrence does for fantasy. And I was like, oh, that'd be so cool to be like on the judging team and get to read all these books. But I will say, I was not expecting how many books y'all were going to send us in the first slush pile. It was like, here's like, what was it? Like 40 books, you know, y'all figure out which ones need to go through, you know? And it's like, what? You know, so how do we get through all these, you know? But it was a really good experience. And it was interesting, Scott, something you were saying earlier about the different differing opinions amongst teams. Well, you also have the differing opinions within teams. And that was really interesting for us, because we have some people who were like, you know, every book's great. And then we had some people who were like,
you know, every book sucks, you know? And so it's just like you finding the balance, you know, between, you know, the really critical reviewers and the really loose reviewers, you know? And I think that taught me a lot about reviewing in general. Like, I think it really helped me grow as a reviewer. And so, but it was cool to see. And then, Dito, I think that you haven't shared your origin story yet.
Oh, sure. So I entered SPFBO and promptly was cut in the slush pile phase. But I don't know how to pronounce her last name. Crystal Matar from Legacy of Brick and Bone. Yeah. She was very generous in saying, hey, I think this might actually be a sci-fi book. Check out this brother competition. And so that got me queued up for the SPSFC. So that's why I entered. And I had only published a couple months prior to the SPFBO. So I was fresh and I was looking for ways to enter the community and to build relationships and just to rise above the noise. Because that's really, in my mind and in experience, that's the great benefit, the two great benefits of competitions like this. I don't think it's actually about... I don't think of it as a competition. I think of it more of a celebration because, like you said, there's no – look, if you gave me a horror novel to review, it's going to get a low score. But if you gave me a space opera that's got a robot dog in it, it's going to win every competition, I judge. And so that was –
robot dog.
So that my experience has been, it's been very positive, and I promote this competition to other authors all the time because I don't think there's any way to lose as long as you go with the expectations that this is my chance to meet readers who might love what I do.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, I don't think I would have found, like, I was a big, so we got Nick's book in our first like round of reads, and so and I was a fan, like I fell in love with that book almost immediately when I read it. It was like the second or third book I read of our slush pile, and I tried to push that book through, you know, like the whole time because I liked it so much. But you know, I don't think I would have found it if it hadn't have been, you know, because I was a judge on this contest, and I've shared it out now to a bunch of people, you know, just on my TikTok channel and all that stuff. But it's really cool to get to meet, you know, so many different people in this competition. I can't imagine, it's probably very similar for the authors too, you know, because you get to hear about all these other people writing in your genre. Is that true? Like, do you like go look up all the other authors that are kind of roughly, or did you try to avoid that? Like,
I actually bought a copy of every author that was a finalist and tried to read them before the winner was announced. So,
I did something similar. I got about halfway through. Sabrina's book is like 7,000 pages long, so it was a stopping point. I'm pretty good friends with David Hoffer now, who wrote Melody, which is also a finalist who wasn't here today. We did in the run-up to the finals, we did like a podcast thing together, and he invited me to join his writing group. And so now on Tuesdays, me and David and some of his friends from San Diego talk writing.
That is so fun. Okay, are y'all all in San Diego, or
I mean I'm not. It's actually funny, my wife is originally from San Diego, so we were there for the holidays and I got to meet some of those folks in person for the first time. It was great.
That's cool. That's awesome. That's really fun.
Okay. I actually just finished reading Nick's book 2 days ago. So I'm not at the same level as Cameron. I bought everyone's book, of course, the sportsmanship gesture of supporting everyone. And you know, time is crazy and there's a million books and so, but I got to Nick's and I sent her a message because it was just, it's so good. And, you know, I'm really glad. And it's hard sometimes, you know, you asked if we look up other authors' books. And because sometimes I want to read books similar to mine, but especially when I'm drafting, I don't really want to read science fiction. Like I'm worried about, you know, their style storytelling infecting my brain and, you know, maybe accidentally taking things from their work that maybe I don't want to. So it's sometimes like I really save sci-fi, which is obviously one of my favorite genres, for those moments in between drafts. So it might take me a long time to get to all the sci-fi books that I want to read, but it's really special when I get down, when I get to sit down and really enjoy a great science fiction novel.
That's awesome. So I'm really curious, what was y'all's experience? You've kind of already talked about, you know, not going in with too high of expectations, but I'd love to hear, like, watching your books like slowly move from, you know, the first entries to, you know, what is it? It's first entries, then the second round, and then quarterfinals, and then semis. Scott, is that how it works?
Yeah, there's a quarterfinals, and then semifinals, and then finals. Yeah.
Yeah. So what was that experience like for y'all, seeing your book kind of like move forward? Were you just trying not to watch, or were you like checking every day, every few minutes, to see if it got updated? You know,
I'm curious. I was ridiculous. I made like lists when before they announced like which book was on which team. Like I tried to like figure out from like different things different people were posting. I did my best. I think it's important in a contest like this, particularly as it goes on, right? Like you start out with like, I don't know, like 300 people or whatever who are all excited to be in the contest, and they're all like posting on their social media and et cetera. Everybody's really excited for, you know, for it. And there's a big sort of top of the funnel. And then as people, you know, as it narrows, as people get kicked out of the contest, as they don't make it onto the next round, I think there's a certain amount of like, you know, people are like, oh, whatever. It's possible I was like that in the first round. It definitely was something where as we got further to the end of the contest, I was like, you know, we should try to do things to help promote the contest. And, you know, trying to hit social media hard, trying to organize. We did a organized book sale at one point, I think, in the semifinals. So just, you know, whatever we can do to help support the contest. Because, I mean, to Dito's point, it's about, you know, building the community and supporting each other as authors, and then, you know, and then the, you know, the book blogger community as well.
That's good. Anybody else have any stories from that time? Are you waking up in cold sweats? You know,
actually I tried to ignore the whole contest until I hit the, is it the quarterfinals that come first?
Yeah.
And then it was like, oh, okay. Because I honestly thought I'd just get cut. As it progressively went on, I was sort of doing the, yeah, I don't care. I'm not looking. And then when it hit the finals, I finally checked out the ray gun and went, yeah, I really did the ray gun. I started hopping in and promoting it, the contest, and telling everyone about it and all that sort of stuff. Probably a little bit too little and a little bit too late, but I honestly didn't think I was going to go anywhere at all in it. So it was a nice surprise. And I'd really like it, Rory, if you could go get your gun and show us all.
Yeah, sure.
Do you want me to take you off the stream while you get it and then bring you back when you have it back?
No, I wore pants. Okay. I had a feeling this would happen.
Just making sure.
Good try. Just making sure.
Now we're all just like watching, like, she's going to bring it up.
Da, 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 da.
Oh, man.
Yeah, don't drop it.
She should have teleported it over.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. That is amazing.
Yeah. That's a cool gun. Yeah. Yeah.
Pretty excellent. Let me see.
Does it come off the stand, or does it?
It does. I'm trepidatious about doing it, but there you go.
Look at that.
Yeah.
That has got to be your profile picture, you know.
Yeah. I actually have a. I got to take a professional author photo, you know, because the cartoon is cute, but yeah, that's got to be in there. But it's nice. So Hugh sent it to me along with a nice little note. And I had to do a little bit. He like sent glue. It was really cute. He sent like a little glue thing for this part of the stand right here. It's really neat to have up there, and it's got some weight to it. I'm going to say it's like 3-4 pounds or... Sorry, I don't do metric.
Y'all remember that little toy, like laser gun that every kid had that went through like 12 or 20 different sounds? Like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. Fill it up. Be cool if you take the battery pack with that and stick it in there. The sound effect.
Yeah, you should make that pitch to see you. Yeah. Yeah. It needs to make a sound or light up.
Yeah. For you, I was thinking the next 3 or 4 contests, he should have like, props from the Silo TV show, like all the props from the shows or something to be nice. Prizes.
That'd be really cool. Okay. Well, how about anybody else? Did y'all have any stories like during the whole process of the contest that, you know, like just what was going through your mind, you know, anything you'd like to share about that?
I can talk as a judge because I think some of the issues that we've had is being vocal about how we, when things get cut, and that was, I mean, it wasn't a pain point as far as should we do it or shouldn't. It's more of like, where do we put it all so people can see it? And from our, I guess from my point as a judge being in here, like there was a lot of things that I wanted to do more of, especially like, you know, coordinated social media blasts and finding a centralized place to put all that stuff because we weren't, I didn't want it to feel like we were trying to hide things or being deceptive about what's going on in the contest. It's just it's just a lot of things happening. And so, I mean, we tried to put together, at least put one more person like on the Twitter account. So if I'm not doing it, someone else can retweet. And I think I'm still the only person besides Duncan who has access to the websites. So there's things I think we'll do. We'll put in place for the next round so that anyone in a team lead position, leads being usually the people who have been there for more than a year or so, can lead another team so that we don't have issues again. That those people can kind of step in and have those roles and expand that, even if, you know, if they don't know how, we can put together some training materials or something like, here's how you can update the website and put stuff together. So, I mean, as we grow, you know, because we obviously when we model it after the SPFBO, like Mark Lawrence has a Blogspot page where he puts all this stuff and he does it fantastically, and it's like, well, we have an actual website with dynamic little tickers and counters and stuff, and it's like, why is this so hard to focus all this stuff on there when we should just make a cheesy HTML table and put links in it? But I don't know, maybe we should just keep it simpler instead of more complicated, but we'll see how it pans out in the future.
Hey Scott, can I just say, hey man, thank you. Like, and to all the teams of reviewers, I don't know who's watching, but speaking just for myself or other indie authors, I think it's safe to say this is what we're doing is can be so lonely, and it can be so like we're fighting against noise just to get people to say, hey, this book exists. And what you're doing and volunteering, like I have paid a lot of money to do things that have been far less effective to rise above the noise. And the fact that you are offering this to the indie community is awesome. So thank you. And I know there's controversies that have happened, and I was a little worried that SPSFC was, people were just going to say, it's not worth it, I'm not doing it anymore. And I just I want to make a point of saying, from my perspective, thank you. Even I wasn't a finalist, I was a semi-finalist. Even if I'd gotten washed out in the slush pile, I'd still, I hope, feel the same. You guys are making a difference, so thank you.
It's been a definitely pleasure project, and I think that comes, like, I used to be a indie music blogger back in the heyday when I worked at a record store. I started a blog and I would like interview indie bands who got like no press, and I just found their CD, or they were the opening acts, you know, so to speak, who were like, you know, they weren't that big, but I'd be like, hey, come over here and let's do it. And, you know, that kind of pushing for the underdog, so to speak, you know, the self-published guys, has always kind of been, you know, a passion of mine, because whether you get paid for it or not, it doesn't matter. It's more about spreading the word and boosting that, just to build that connection so that, you know, you can be a cheerleader for these people who may not know that people are listening or people are watching or reading books, but as long as you can say, hey, I see you, quote unquote, like, you know, then that's kind of what's in it for me. It's just really having that, like, hey guys, don't feel discouraged. We know you're out there. We're reading your books, and come join us and do what you can. So yeah, it's all a passion project, and it's been fun. It's been super exciting to see how all this progresses and the ups and downs and all that stuff. It's good stuff. I just wish I had more time to do it as often as I could.
That's good. Nick, how about you? Did you have any interesting experience of kind of watching your book move through the ranks?
Yeah, so I wouldn't say that I kind of went in with any expectations. Like I said earlier, I thought the book that I was submitting this time was better than the one I submitted the first time, but that doesn't necessarily mean anything because it's different judging teams and, you know, it's all about kind of personal styles and tastes and stuff. So I kind of thought, you know, if bare minimum I get a few nice reviews out of it, like I'll be kind of happy about that. And then it just kind of snowballs, and every time you get a little bit further, you kind of want to then go a bit further. So a couple of the early reviews I got in from Teen Escapist, I think yourself, Neil, and Ash as well, were like really positive. And that kind of, I suppose, gave a bit of confidence, like, oh, you know, maybe I'll get to the quarterfinals this time instead of the first round. And then you get to the quarterfinals, and then I was like absolutely kind of buzzing about that. I was really, really happy and excited. And then there's the kind of little voice in the back of your head, like, oh, like maybe I could get to the semifinals. But at the same time, like, just enjoying the ride for what it is and kind of not taking anything for granted and just kind of enjoying the whole experience. But yeah, yeah. I feel like every time, and I did kind of track how things were going. I read the reviews, and yeah, I suppose every little stage that it goes through just gets a little bit more exciting, and you start to think a little bit more. And then obviously when it came to the finals and all the kind of like the scores out of 10 were all kind of going, and it was like so close the whole time. That was probably the one point that was like, right, whatever happens, I'm a finalist and I'm happy with that. And I kind of stepped back a little bit then. But yeah, and then to get runner up was more than I would like ever have kind of imagined at the start. And I read Rory's book just before Christmas and absolutely loved it. It's amazing. It's beautiful. It's just fantastic. So I was very, very happy to come runner up to a book like that.
That's cool.
Dito, so when you won the like the cover prize, did you and your cover artist go out for beers or anything? Like the jaw, like, celebrate or, you know, or
my cover artist emailed me and said, do I get a ray gun? So he was very disappointed when he didn't get a ray gun, and I was too. I mean, I would have loved to hook him up like that, but he lives in Colorado Springs. I'm in Phoenix, so we just digital high five.
Yeah. Scott, note for next year, you need the cover artist winner gets a poster of a ray gun.
Yeah. Yeah.
There we go. You know, at least kind of matches, you know. Okay. Well, cool. Well, thank you all for sharing a little about that kind of experience in the process. But I'd love to spend just a few minutes or so just on your books themselves. I definitely have, you know, I'm sure Scott's with me on this, and y'all also might have questions for each other. But I'm curious, why don't we start with Cameron? Would you mind sharing a little bit? I'm really like, what made you decide when you were going to start that book that you're going to start with like an old lady, you know, like, or is because it was right. The main character was an older woman, right? And she
was a grandmother, and yeah, she was unique in the known worlds because she was dying of old age, which nobody was doing in the beginning of the series. I think because I wanted to write science fiction, I also really badly wanted to avoid a lot of the cliches and the generic what appears in every book. And it seemed to me that going with just a, you know, a 30-year-old or a normal main character sort of would just be playing into it, wouldn't make the book unique in any way. So I looked for ways to make it unique, and making her older was one way to do it, but it also opened up the book perfectly because it set up all sorts of conflicts and themes and pretty much the book flowed from there. Once I had that nailed down, that was the key to her character and the rest of the book.
Yeah, it really did. Having her, that much life experience for your main character, really did like let you be able to take the book in several different directions. Mm. Also, there's someone who I think we're getting some feedback from, Mike Wise. I'm not quite sure who that is, but I was just mentioning that. So might want to, maybe if you're not talking, why don't we go ahead and try and mute yourself just for a few minutes. But I'm curious though, Cameron, so that really did open up your character to all sorts of paths. Tell us, would you mind like giving us like a little bit of a pitch for those who are maybe watching that haven't had a chance to read your book yet? Would you mind sharing just a little bit more about your book in general?
Sure. It's the first book in the Imperial Hammer space opera series, of which there's 5 books and a short story. There's also now an 8-book spin-off series called The Iron Hammer. But the first book is primarily about a grandmother called Danny Andela, who was part of the Marines. She was a soldier, sorry, Rangers. And retired in disgrace and decided to die of old age. She was not going to do any of the rejuvenation processes that were available for people in that time. Then she finds out from her granddaughter that her son, who has died some time before, may have been involved in an interesting conspiracy involving the emperor. And also the gates arrays that they use for transporting for faster than light jumps, basically wormhole gates. The array of gates becomes sentient. And I won't go any further. You've got a whole lot of elements, including the emperor and the gates array and Danny herself and the death of her son that all just meet up at the end with what I've been told is a pretty cool twist. So,
forgot I was muted for half a second. That's really cool. Thanks for sharing a little bit about. Does anybody else have any like? I don't know. I know some of you said you've read some through. Did anybody else like Scott? Do you have any questions or anything that you'd have for Cameron about that or anything?
No, I think those type. I guess based on your previous writing experience, extensive. Books. How do those ideas kind of percolate and not seem, you know, tired or since you have such an extensive catalog, I suppose.
I think that's actually part of the process when I'm starting to build the concept of for a new series or a new book, is I'm constantly looking for what's different, what's new, what have I not done before, what would make this different from everything else that I've read. And that's basically how Danny was formed, because I was going for that something that's a little bit different. It's a very fine line in indie publishing because you're looking to entertain the reader. And a lot of readers, particularly for the genre fiction like space opera, are looking for the same but different. So you can't afford to be hugely unique because it'll be too different for them and they won't be comfortable reading it because it doesn't have that the familiar tropes and things like that. You have to be just a little bit different and interesting. And if you can hook them in with the story, then you're off to the races.
A question for you.
Mm.
Do you find that everything is getting more extreme, that you're having to push more and more? Because you've written 210 books, so... Mm.
They're all in different genres. They're not all space opera. But yes, I think once you've written a few books in a particular genre, you do have to keep pushing for the unique and the new. But the interesting thing there is that the characters will always save you. You can have a really generic setting. And if the characters are deep enough and develop well enough, it still reads fresh. So I usually end up falling back on character to make everything unique and interesting.
Awesome. And for those watching who weren't here at the beginning, she's written over 200 books. So I'll give you all a chance to have your jaw drop for a second. So, okay.
All right, let's do the same path that we did before. Dito, would you mind sharing a little bit about your book? And your book, you know, it hit me after when we started to get on. Your book is the only one I have not read yet from this panel. I need to get to it. I know it never made it around to my list. I'm sorry about that. But I would love to hear a little bit about your book. I know you didn't make it to the finals, but you have a cool cover. So tell us about it.
Well, thanks. Okay. My book is Indiana Jones Meets Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. It's called Debunked. And it's the start of a series called the Terra Venom Chronicles. And so the world's worst explorer has gone missing for the sixth time in 2 years. And this time, when he doesn't reappear in a random place on the planet, they have a funeral, assassins attack, and his grandchildren, Alexandria and Ozymandias, get swept up in a huge adventure and taken to another world where they discover their grandfather may be the greatest explorer in history.
That sounds fantastic. It really does.
Well, thanks.
Yeah. So I'm curious. So were you like a big, so like Indiana Jones, like explain the level of Indiana Jones. Like, are we being chased by things that are rolling after us? Or like, are we looking, are they going on like an adventure to find like treasure? Or is this more of like,
the airship. More of like a,
yeah. Or is this more like Hardy Boys where, you know, there's like a mystery in a way, you know, they're trying to find, you know,
adventure and fun were my two watchwords. So what I was intrigued by was the notion of exploration. So I grew up in Saudi Arabia, and my family did a lot of desert expeditions. So we would go out and drive out in the desert for the weekend or even for as long as a week and be self-sufficient exploring out there. And then after that, we lived on a sailboat and we actually circumnavigated as a family. Wow. And so a lot of my life has been about pushing and chasing the horizon. And I'm very comfortable with the notion of remote wilderness. And so I'm also fascinated by, we live in a world where people said, hey, I don't know what's over there. And we're probably not going to survive. And our life expectancy is like 31. But you want to see what's over that hill over there? And then they would go. And like the fact that we were pushing the horizon and pushing the boundaries, like what is the fiber of the explorer who does that? Yeah. And so that was the seeds of Sir Quidbey Forsyth, who's the world's worst explorer. And so everything, when I say Indiana Jones, it's the emphasis on adventure, but also with a sense of humor and the idea that there's a lot out there that's unknown, but there's thrilling ways to discover it.
That's awesome. Well, anybody have any questions? Anybody else have any questions for him?
Can you talk about the airship?
Oh, sure. So the airship, the main airship in this novel, her name is Angelus. And so living on a sailboat, which I did over a decade, I can look at another boat. And just by virtue of the design and the features on that boat, I can tell you about their captain, what their priorities are. Is it speed? Is it safety? Is it how many people are on the boat? What? How are they sailing? Things like this. And so to me, it's kind of like Jack Sparrow in Pirates of the Caribbean, how he said a ship is more than a keel and a rudder. A ship is freedom. To me, an airship is the ultimate expression of that freedom because you're existing in, you know, a whole nother plane of dimension because you can go with altitude while still having the weather being the defining character in what happens in your day. And so airships, and the other thing, and I'm sure all of you have the same experience. Once I started writing a book, I realized I'm allowed to put the most awesome things I want into a story. And like number one on my list was like airships. And number two was, you guys remember that cartoon Tailspin back in the day?
For sure.
Well, so Baloo from Jungle Book was piloting like a cargo plane. There was a float plane. And they would throw a guy out behind him and he would surf through the sky. That was number two on my list. So I just went right down the list. That's why airships.
That's awesome. Now I want to see your list to know what's going to be in your next book. You know, what else does he have on his want to see list? That's cool. Well, great. Thank you for sharing that.
Oh, my pleasure.
why don't we move on to Drew? Drew, so you have ridden what might be like the most wild adventure anybody's ever gone on in space. And I'm curious to hear a little bit about that. This reminded me a lot of, and I'm sure anybody else who's read it probably thinks this way too, but Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy-esque feel, you know, is what I got when I read your book. And so I'd love for you to tell us a little bit about it and just kind of like what guided you down that path.
Yeah, for sure. And I definitely relate to some of what Dito's saying about having a list of just like, what are all the awesome things I can do? Because definitely how I approach writing is what I call maximalist. I actually stole that from the guys who directed Everything Everywhere All at Once. They mentioned it in an NPR interview, and I was like, that is what I do. It's all about just like, what can you cram in, and what kind of experience can you give to the reader that's just all the stuff.
That totally fits the vibe of your book, by the way.
Yeah. One of the things that that I've been talking more about recently that I discovered about myself since writing the book is I've been diagnosed with ADHD, and it's one of those things when you get a late diagnosis like that, you have sort of that that like movie revelation moment where like there's the zoom in and you're like, oh, so many things in my life make sense, and it's everywhere in my writing, just the need and desire to just give readers the experience of just sort of like the moment, and doing different things, which was for me a lot of the fun of the book is going along and being like, and in this chapter it's going to be a weird flashback that's in a very specific style for this chapter, and so that's been a lot of fun. I guess should I mention what the book's actually about? I guess
yeah share a little bit with us about what your book's about.
Yeah, so it's a science fantasy comedy adventure mystery box sort of novel. It's set in the distant future in the 201st century, in a time of starships and sorcery. And there's an accountant, Percival Gint, with a dark secret, who's on a quest to find an ancient, sentient doomsday weapon from maybe the dawn of time, before it falls into the wrong hands. Of course, there are space Nazis. You can't go to the space Nazis. And then the space Nazis get it, and we find out what happens after that when our hero fails. You mentioned Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. It's very much a book for folks who like Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. I think also for folks who are in the pop culture universe, like a Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy sort of feel to it. Really, anything with the word galaxy in it, if you like it, you're gonna like my book.
Wizard of Oz, yeah, you know, all that stuff, flying monkeys, all sorts of stuff. So
yeah, so it's a lot of fun. I my list had talking gorillas, a masquerade ball. I had my cyborgs and my there's a dinosaur foie gras at some point, which is delicious. Just all of these like little things. I was just like, you know what? I'm not sure if I'm ever going to get to write another novel after this. Like maybe someone will stop me. And so it's all going in.
Oh, so Dito took a couple things, but you just took your whole list and just shoved it in.
Whole list.
So you got a whole new list for the next book.
So. Yeah. Yeah. There's, there are new things, which maybe I'll talk about later.
Sounds good. All right, Nick, would you mind sharing a little bit about your book with us? I've already mentioned, you know, how much I loved your book, but there was a comment made in our reviewer chat about your book. Like, I was like, I love this book. It's so fun, different. And someone was like, this just feels like Star Wars. And I was like, yeah, that's why I love it so much. You know, so why don't you share a little bit about your book and just tell us some about that stuff. So.
Yeah, so I mean, it's definitely a love letter to the kinds of sci-fi that I've sort of enjoyed reading growing up and more recently. So it's a bit of a mix of everything, you know. It's if you like Star Wars, you'll probably like it. You know, Mass Effect, The Expanse. It's kind of all those kind of influences. I suppose talking about lists, I'm very much the same as Drew. I kind of threw the whole list in and the kitchen sink. Like, I just wanted to do everything that I enjoyed about other sci-fi things and somehow like cram them into one book. So there's like, yeah, there's like aliens, there's AI, like cybernetics, there's like space battles, different planets. So, and I think an interesting thing is some people really love that. Some people really enjoyed that there were so many different bits to it. And I think other people found that it was trying to do too much. So I think it's funny because that kind of goes back to just like personal taste. And I think the people that enjoyed it really enjoyed it. And then it didn't quite work for some other people. But I mean, as a writer, that's fine. Like, you're never going to get everyone to enjoy your book. So I as long as some people are like, yeah, this is exactly the kind of thing I want to read, then that's all you can really ask for. So yeah, it's a space opera. It's about a group of humans who leave behind their dying planet to try and find a new home for humanity. So they kind of use this sort of ancient technology they don't quite understand to travel to a new galaxy, only to get there and find that there's already this kind of booming civilization in place, but things aren't going so well for them, and they're pretty much on the sort of brink of civil war. There's a lot of different sort of alien species and factions, and in the background of it all, there's these mysterious way stations that seem to be kind of counting down to something coming that nobody knows quite what it's about. So yeah, there's a lot in there, and it's a trilogy as well, and it's not one of those trilogies where it's like book one can stand on its own and then it kind of goes into two or three. It's very much a one story told over three books. So yeah, I suppose the first one does kind of end with a cliffhanger, which again, some people were okay with, some people not so much. But yeah, I just had a lot of things that I enjoyed from kind of sci-fi that I've enjoyed that I just wanted to kind of get down on paper as it was. So it's very much a sort of love letter to all the kind of tropes. I will say it is tropey. I'm not like kind of breaking new ground or trying to do something really innovative. I just want to just have fun and write something that I would want to read. So
that's good. I'm wondering, are you like a really big fan of alligators? Is that like, because that's one of your main alien species, right, in that book?
Yeah, so. the Iska, they're kind of like, yeah, I suppose like reptilian sort of lizard-like.
I couldn't help picturing alligators or crocodiles or something when I was reading.
Yeah, so I don't know if anyone read or remembers Animorphs, but there was like an alien species, I don't even know how to pronounce it, like the Hork-Bajir, and that they were kind of like reptilian kind of dinosaur-like, but ultimately like also very peaceful, and that was kind of, yeah, one of the inspirations for them.
Love it. That's good. Well, great. Thanks for sharing. That's really good. And that's a completed trilogy now, correct?
Yeah.
And so that's good. All right, Rory, you going to break out the cat, or is the cat in there? I think that's all.
He's asleep.
Oh, okay.
Thank goodness, because he's a terrorist.
Oh, okay. So my first question for you is definitely, is the cat in the book based on your personal cat? Like, are they the same one and the same?
They're very similar.
Okay.
So my cat is gray and white in the sort of a tuxedo pattern, and obviously Pumpkin is orange. But the differences go a little further. You know, my cat is not smart enough to vomit in the toilet like the rest of us. But Pumpkin is. I agree, you know, with a lot of readers that Pumpkin is just a cat. There's really nothing special about Pumpkin. But also there is something a little bit fantastical and special about Pumpkin. But all the crazy little antics that he pulls when he attacks Scout's face and they have to build this obstacle course for him, that pulled from some real experiences a couple times. Yeah. I've got the scratches to prove it.
Oh no.
Yeah. We love them though, right?
Yeah.
We love cats. Cats are good.
Yeah. Actually, my wife and I'm the cat person in my family. My wife is not. And so like, I really want a cat again. We had a cat when we first got married. But we don't have one now. And I'm like, I want one. She's like, never again.
Please.
I want another cat.
It's tough. And they're also different, you know?
Yeah.
So it's, Yeah, but you should get one anyway. You just put a sad little kitten outside the door and be it's crying. Where's its mother?
Who's gonna say no to a cat? So, or kitten, I guess I'm saying. Okay, well, share a little bit about the Last Gifts of the Universe. I love, sure. You know, like, and there might still be people watching or that might watch this that don't know what your book is about. Yeah. So tell us a little bit about the number one winner of the contest. So.
By a hair. But yes. So The Last Gifts of the Universe is about the end of the universe and about two archivists and their cat who were going in search of answers in the dead graveyard of civilizations over everything. It's about a little bit more than that. But that's definitely the pitch. And, you know, it's been really interesting listening to everybody sort of talking about like throwing the whole kitchen sink and everything else in there. That sounds, I think I want to do that next. That sounds really fun and freeing and good. Like, not in a, like, that just sounds great. Because with Last Gifts, I think it's a very quiet book. I found I was taking a lot out of it to sort of just highlight these characters. And, you know, especially because I was looking at the first year's winner, Iron Truth, and it was like this really explosive, kind of crazy, it was like 400-page space opera adventure. And that's kind of why I said when I entered the competition, I definitely did it on a chance. Because I was like, well, you know, maybe this isn't the typical thing that especially indie readers are looking for when they're looking for a sci-fi book. But I'm just really grateful to have been proven wrong and that this kind of weird, quiet story about two siblings in the end of the universe made the impact that it did. I'm really happy about that. And, you know, it's a nice feeling.
I'm really hoping that that Last Gifts of the Universe inspires, like, the sci-fi genre to really like kind of go after that Legends and Lattes feel. Cause I feel like yours is very much the cozy sci-fi that we don't have yet. Like, I think yours might be one of the first that I've really seen. And maybe y'all know about more that I don't, but like you had pizza parties and all sorts of stuff, you know? So like it really did feel, you know, cozy when they weren't, you know, being ambushed by their evil counterparts.
Yeah. I actually discovered her after I came out with Last Gifts because people kept saying, you're Becky Chambers, who I really recommend Becky Chambers. I went and I was like, why are you all telling me I'm Becky Chambers? I'm not Becky. Yeah. You know, Drew, I actually haven't read that one yet. I've been reading her Monk and Robot series, which is just phenomenal. But I've heard Long Way to an Angry Planet is like one of the super good ones. So, I think cozy sci-fi definitely exists out there. But I also want to see more of it because, you know, I think a lot of us here play with genre in a fun way because it's interesting defining what science fiction is. You know, fantasy always seems so sure of itself. And then we walk in here like, I don't know what we are. Like, do you require hard science fiction or do you just require what kind of looks like sci-fi? And so it's cool to kind of push into the space with something a little unconventional and get into the finals and, you know, get the trophy. It's very nice. It's like, you know, everyone here has said stuff that they're playing with and doing too, like, and that's great. That's a good thing.
Yeah, I haven't gotten around to Becky Chambers yet. I guess I need to do that. But it was a nice breath of fresh air when I read your book for the finals, you know. Does anybody else, Scott, what was your experience with reading through all these books like for the contest? Was it kind of as wild? You had already been through this in the first competition, right? And so that was my first experience. What was it like for you?
Yeah. So it's interesting to see the different kind of criteria. So when I go into one of these, you know, I'm not a writer by trade or something. So I'm not concerned about formatting, punctuation, and the pace and hitting the right beats at the right time. You know, I look at it more of a high level view like, what is the story either trying to accomplish, or what's the mood? I'm very much the feel kind of reader, where it can be written horribly and stuff like that. But if the ideas can come across and the feel of the book, the tensions and the ups and downs kind of get me, you know, throw in a little bit of the humor and things like that. Like, those are the things, like, I can let most of the other stuff slide. Like, so judging these, it's, you know, my way is I'm only one judge, because you're up against all these other people who maybe sometimes they are authors and they have gone through writing courses. They know the textbook criteria that they're judging it against. And, you know, they can knock something down because after every dialogue, it says, he said, or, you know, he said, she said, like, they, you know, that's a no-go, like, cross that, toss that one up. So those things I'm very forgiving about. It's more about the uniqueness of the idea and how it captivates me as a reader. Those are the ones that kind of get the top of my list. So seeing the way that these go through the different judges and the different teams and kind of how they filter out. So yeah, I mean, there's a few that have been the top of some team's list, and then they get passed to another team to be checked, and they tank because it's just, they're questioning the other team's sanity, because they're like, you really think this? And it's just about, they're so focused on the, I don't know, not the actions as they are actions, not so much of they're doing these actions because it serves the plot in such a way. Like, it, they take it more of a face value as opposed to a value of the book as a whole. So I think that's a big thing that I've seen as we move on, is the different levels of judging. And I've learned that mine is I'm more forgiving, but I think it's more of a different style than other people. So we try to work it out. We try to balance it. And the teams that come by are, you know, sometimes they're teams of people who have reviewed together before. They're part of the same type of blog or website. And then there's teams who don't know each other at all, and they don't know each other's styles, and they just have volunteered. So we kind of put them in a bucket together, and we see how they mingle. So it's a very much a mixed bag, but it's interesting to see how those dynamics kind of work out. And it's a long time. I mean, we try to keep the pace going, and oftentimes reviewers drop out because life, and, you know, they can't get to some books, and that's okay. We're not forcing anybody to be here and do this, but as people go through the process, we it's a very much a lull. Like, there's always the peaks of when books get shuffled around. And then after that, like, when people are reading, it's just silence until, you know, another phase ends, and then we get an increase in activity, and then otherwise it's silence. So we want to try to keep the activity going throughout and keep more of a level set through those. So we can get the authors engaged. We can have some more community activities and Q&As and interviews and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, we had in our team, we started with, I think, 8 reviewers. And then after the first round, I think we had 7. And then after the next round, I think we had 6. And it just, like, kept dropping, like, every level. It's like we keep losing somebody. But thankfully, the books lessened, the amount of books we had to read lessened with each time.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's cool. Well, I hate to do this. I need to hop off this call and go deal with the family thing. But I think, Scott, you're going to take it from here, I believe, and just kind of wrap us up. And I feel like we made it through, unless there's a question that y'all really want to talk about. I think it'd be really good if y'all just could walk through, you know, what projects you're currently working on, you know, where can people find your books and get in touch with you. And if you can just make sure that happens for everybody, that'd be awesome. So does that sound good? Yeah. That sound good, everybody?
Thanks, Neil.
Feel free to talk bad about me after I leave.
Thanks very much.
Bye. All right.
Thank you, Neil.
Yeah, all right. So, yeah, we can go through and go around Robin and talk about what you guys are working on next and where we can find you. And I know all the links to these, all your books are in the description of this video. So people can find you there, but you can let us know what you're working on next. And we'll start with you, Cameron.
I literally just yesterday finished the last book in the Ptolemy Lane Tales, which is a mix of space opera and crime and mystery. And I'll be rolling straight into another Hammer series, because I put a poll out with my readers, and I had something like 98% of them want another Hammer series. So I'll be doing a third Hammer series. that's my future.
Nice. Dito, how's your 3D printing side job going?
Well, I tell you what, my life is in flux right now. I used to run a recording studio, so I have a lot of recording gear that I saved up. But I thought that recording an audiobook myself would be a piece of cake, and it has humbled me greatly. Just the fact that there's so many people who own pickups in the United States and they like to drive past my house. Has really impacted my progress on recording this thing. So I'm 53% of the way through the audiobook for Debunked, and I do a lot of live events. So like Comic Cons and bookstore signings, and I did a pet adoption drive. I mean, I do a variety of things, but one of the unifying requests is people ask, do you have an audiobook? And that's really been increasing in the past year. And so I've promised so many of them that I'm going to finish this thing. So that's number one on my priority list. But I'm working hard on book two in the Terra Venom Chronicles, the sequel. But for me, the big trick is my family, we're actually going sailing next month. So in 2017, we tried to sail from Florida to New Zealand, and long story, we made it to Galapagos and COVID shut the Pacific. So we sailed up the Sea of Cortez, and the boat's been out of the water for 3 years. So it's my parents, my wife, me, and our two daughters. And so now we're going to try again. We're going to head for New Zealand. So that is coming up. Dad and I were just in Mexico last week. I spent 10 days refitting the boat, doing the, you know, getting the engines running again and such. So all that to say, I wrote Debunked during that trip, and I did it while my kids did school. I would write on my laptop, and so that's the plan for book two, is as we're sailing this time.
Nice. Awesome. All right, Drew, what you got going on?
Since Dito was talking about non-writing things, I'll just say that as of possibly while we've been on this call, I've gotten a third cat. A couple weeks ago there, we decided we were going to adopt a mother and one of the cats from the litter. We thought it'd be nice to keep the mother and the cat together. And there were only two cats left in the litter. And we're like, well, I guess we have to take all three. And then the run of the litter wasn't big enough yet to come home. And so there's a tiny cat, 2 pounds, running around upstairs as I talk. So less exciting than that. I'm every year I say, this is the year that the follow-up to Conspiracy of Days will come out. It's been 98% done for 3 years now. And it's just one piece of it that I'm still working on. It's, called Percival Gint and the Inevitability of Fire and Other Cases. And so it's a prequel told in 11 stories that explain the backstory of the main character and how he kind of became the person that he is. The story that's been taking me forever is Choose Your Own Adventure. Except it's not Choose Your Own Adventure for legal reasons, but it's Choose Your Own Adventure. But really high-minded, highbrow Choose Your Own Adventure, which takes you 4 years to write. And then the other thing that I'm working on that I'm really excited about is the piece that I'm working on with the writers group. It's a literary detective novel with sort of a family drama sort of feel to it that explores neurodiversity and dysfunction against a backdrop of niche sci-fi fandom in the 1990s. I'm really excited about it. It is in many ways very different from the other things I've written, and in other ways very, very similar. I don't know when that will be out. It's possible I might try to go traditional with it. We will see.
Interesting. Awesome. Good stuff. All right, Nick, what do you got? More. Well, I know your Sea of Souls, and I've seen that everywhere, and I'm super excited for that. And I assume that's going to be continuing.
Yeah. So I've kind of made the sort of switch, I guess, from sci-fi to fantasy. So working on a sort of fantasy trilogy. The first book being Sea of Souls, which is out now, and I'm currently working on book two. So it's like a Scottish-inspired dark fantasy, kind of filled with sort of like folklore, magic, kind of high seas adventure. Sort of premises that the main character Isla has been out sailing the kind of seas the past 7 years until a kind of family tragedy pulls her back home, and then she gets kind of embroiled in all these sort of kind of conflict that's going on between the humans and the Selkies back home, and she ends up teaming up with a Selkie in exile to try and steal back a stolen pelt, and sort of deal with the various kind of nefarious things that are happening on the island. So it's something that I wanted to write. I wanted to kind of, obviously being from Scotland, I kind of wanted to draw on kind of Scottish folklore, mythology, and sort of weave all that in. And it's sort of set in a sort of secondary world that's obviously very kind of Scottish inspired, and the sort of timelines, I suppose, around the kind of golden age of piracy, that kind of timeline. So it's like lots of kind of high seas adventure, kind of gunpowder and cutlasses, magic. I'm trying not to throw the whole list in again. I'm trying to be a little bit more restrained this time. We'll see how it goes. I think I did okay in book once, but we'll see how the next two grow. But yeah, really, really enjoyed writing that. And it's been a nice, I suppose, kind of change of pace, something a bit different from writing sci-fi primarily the past few years. So very much working on book two of that just now. And then with Waystations, I've got the audiobooks are out for books one and two, and we're currently about halfway through the recording of book three. So hopefully that shouldn't be too much longer, and then the trilogy will be out on audiobook. So that'll be nice to look forward to as well.
Nice, nice. Was there an experience or audiobook production tips to offer if the giant muffler trucks don't stop driving by Edith's house? What was your experience to go that route, or how did you approach that?
So I'm working with a narrator, so luckily he's got his he's all set up with his equipment and stuff. So my only job is to kind of like listen through the chapters and make sure everything's all good. So yeah, he's done a really, really good job, and yeah, really looking forward to hearing the rest of book three.
Awesome. All right, Rory, how's it going over there? You just enjoying your trophy?
Just enjoying the trophy. Yeah. Hanging out. No real plans for the future. I'm in a sort of strange position where I can't actually talk about a couple things that are happening right now. I can talk about the book that I'm drafting, and you know, I'm excited about that. It's a sci-fi that takes place in a theme park. It's a planet called Happy. It's the happiest place in the universe. Just this super happy, amazing nanotechnology powered theme park that can shift to your every desire. And then the clinically depressed character who can't possibly be happy while experiencing that. And then the person whose job it is to make them happy or they're fired. So that's my current project. I'm really excited about that. But some stuff that I would really love to share. Unfortunately, I'm not really in a position to do that just yet. Gotcha. I will say, following the competition, I did end up signing with an agent, which was really nice. Valentina Sainato at Jabberwocky. She's just exceptional. And, it's really cool to work with somebody who validates and understands self-publishing, even though they're in a traditional space. That's a really awesome bridge to work with on someone, or work on with someone. ADHD, right, Drew? Dyslexia. Yeah. I can say that in the next hopefully couple of weeks, some news is coming out that I've been sitting on for a really long time, and I'm really excited about. But I'm still writing, I'm still doing stuff. I'm trying to catch up on all of my reading, getting to some folks' wonderful books that I haven't had the opportunity to get to yet, both in indie and trad spaces. And yeah, just hanging out.
Awesome.
Petting my cat sometimes, you know?
Yeah. Exciting stuff. Yeah. Well, yeah, I think that'll pretty much wrap it up for us. Thanks everybody for joining on. That was fun. Exciting.
Yeah, hope
we'll see you again with your next publication and future competitions.
And Cameron book 220.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll never know it's her, right? Because it'll be a different pen name.
I wrote them down. I'm going.
Oh yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah. And so yeah, we'll keep. You guys are still, all the authors and things are still welcome in the Discord and things, and you be sure to check them out. All the links are in the description of this video. You can go to the spsfc.org to check that website out, which is always a work in progress. We're getting through the semifinalists announcements now, and then I think the finalist announcements that come in April. I should know this, but I think it's the beginning of April. Should be our finalist announcements. So it'll be a lot of good stuff to add to your TBRs. And we'll keep trucking along. Yeah, I don't think it's planning on stopping anytime soon. As much of any resistance we meet, we'll keep going. And we'll see. Hopefully it gets bigger and better as we move forward. But I'm so glad that you guys joined in and took the chance and got to talk to you guys and say hi. Meet each other, make a good community, and as we grow and move forward, we'll keep this thing trucking along. Thanks to everybody at TBRCon and FanFi Addict for hosting us.
Yes, and thank you, Scott.
Yeah.
Thanks, Scott. Thank you, Scott.
Thanks, everybody. Any final questions, comments?
I have a question for Rory.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Blink twice if it's a film deal.
I can tell you what it's not. That would be, oh, Dito, please, if you know anyone, let me know.
Yeah. Awesome. All right, guys. Well, thanks again. I'll end the stream here. We'll probably chat for a few minutes and then we can be on our way.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye.